pardon the interruption, but I'm Pablo Torre. We had an earthquake up here in New York today, Tony, but nothing could keep me from working with you.
Tony Kornheiser, I like you, Pablo, but that feels a little clingy. I mean, that feels like you're going overboard.
You know, clinging
I read about
was what
the
I was
earthquake.
Doing.
I read about the earthquake. I was in the San Francisco earthquake in the World Series.
That
got me off my game for quite some time.
A couple decades?
I think terrifying. Yeah, I think terrifying is an accurate term on that one. And then yeah. I remember when the Giants fans just started celebrating. They loved it so, and I went, what are you people made of? Of course, stop. Get out of here. Welcome to PTI, boys and girls. Wilbon is making it a straight flush of off days, so joining me once more is our great friend from the podcast, Pablo Torre Finds Out, Mr. Pablo Torre. And we begin today with the women's Final Four in Cleveland. Like on the men's side, there are two number one seeds in the draw, South Carolina and Iowa. They are joined by two number three seeds, Connecticut and North Carolina State. Overall number one and undefeated South Carolina will play NC State in the first game. It's Iowa-UConn in the second. Pablo, who do you have winning?
I have Iowa. I have South Carolina. I want to start with South Carolina, though, Tony, because I think that zooming out on what Dawn Staley has done with this team, they lost five players to the WNBA entering this season. Three of them are first rounders. And here we have an undefeated team, arguably her greatest coaching job ever, right? She has a freshman, Fulwiley, who's really good. Cardozo in the middle. Pau-Pau, this shooter from the perimeter. Three players I didn't know about until this season. Now I recognize, okay, with Dawn Staley, they're probably pros too. So I say all of that to say that that is the favorite. They should be the favorite. But if you listen to me talk to you this week about Caitlin Clark, you know that I'm a believer. I worship at the altar that she has presented. I am blown away by what her powers are. I don't doubt those either. I have Iowa.
Yeah. I want to say first off that I'm very sad that the Iowa-UConn game is the late game with like a 9:30 start, which really means a 9:45 start because I know how old right. I am and I know I'm going to try. But I'm not going to make it all the way through. I'm not. And what makes me sad is because that is the star turn game. All right, yes. Caitlin Clark has been the player of the year the last 2 years. Paige Beckers was the player of the year when she was a freshman. Caitlin Clark is responsible for all these people going to games physically and watching them on TV. These two names are above the title. You know, that's the top line of the marquee. Lately, I've always felt that Iowa was going to lose. I've sort of felt that they don't play a lot of defense. I sort of felt they don't get a lot of rebounds. And I find it amazing that they always rely upon Caitlin Clark to drag them over the finish line. And yet she has, in fact, been doing that. And I feel that same way against UConn because I didn't expect UConn to get this far. But now that they have, Pablo, there's a part of muscle memory when you've been in 1,000 Final Fours like UConn has been in. Maybe you can win that game. I agree with you completely on South Carolina. They're a juggernaut. I expect them to win. This is where they were last year, though. They were undefeated, and if I'm not mistaken, they then lost to Iowa in the national semifinal. They're undefeated again. So, you know, symmetry dictates that they play Iowa in the finals, which is the final that you have. And if they do, I will vote for South Carolina. I will.
Tony, I beseech you to do the thing you never do and just caffeinate late at night. Just caffeinate for this game. Look, UConn, here's what you might see if you stay up. And I know you won't, but I just have to say it. If you were to stay up, I think you'd see UConn so injury depleted, Tony. Remember how many players they played to get to the Final Four?
Yeah,
they played seven players. They had six who were out. Caitlin Clark may be the closest thing to the Steph Curry experience that we've seen in the NCAAs, of course, surpassing what he did at Davidson, making it, of course, to the Final Four. But I don't think that Caitlin Clark is going to get stopped by an injury-depleted UConn team. But speaking of late-night adventures, we move to the NBA. Because the Sixers beat the Heat in Miami to close the gap on avoiding the play-in. The Knicks beat the Kings on the day Julius Randle was ruled out for the season. The Warriors all but ended the Rockets' playoff hopes. And finally, the Clippers, without Kawhi, beat the Nuggets in Los Angeles. So, Tony, which team had last night's most significant win?
Yeah, this is a very easy one. It's Philadelphia. I mean, there's just no question. It's Philadelphia. They went to Miami. They beat Miami in Miami, a game they had to win. They've got to jump over Miami to avoid the play-in. Miami had Jimmy Butler out there for 40 minutes, and I want to get these stats right because Tyrese Maxey, 37 points, 11 assists, and 9 rebounds, and they got 29 points in 33 minutes out of Embiid. So I guess Embiid wasn't questionable for those 33 minutes. Now, I think you can make the case, Pablo, that the loss isn't as terrible for Miami as the win is terrific for Philadelphia, because Miami can still hold off Philadelphia the rest of the season. But with Indiana losing as well, Philadelphia now in a game they had to win, they're only a half game behind Miami. They're only one game behind Indiana. And you don't want to be in a play-in because you don't want to take the chance of drawing Boston or even Milwaukee. You don't want to take that chance in the first round. You don't.
No, the Sixers have a very simple mission. They are an Operation Six Seed. They have a week if they get the six seed. If they don't, they have less in terms of the rest that Embiid might get ahead of the postseason, in which, by the way, everything very quickly turns existential. We've sort of delayed this conversation because he's been out, but if they lose again, if the Sixers lose again, the same conversation but worse will happen about, so what are we even doing here? How long is this guy going to stay? Those are the dominoes that'll fall. I do want to doff my cap, though, right, to the rest of the field here, because the Warriors beating the Rockets, as our old friend Draymond Green basically predicted, it has essentially ended the Rockets' run. So they're out of the 10th seed, the Warriors are in, and the Warriors in the play-in round for the NBA as a business, for me as a fan, that is very good news. The Clippers, though, Tony, the Clippers, what they're doing with Kawhi Leonard injured again, this in their side of this bracket is the same old song, right? You can't trust Kawhi Leonard because his legs are betraying him, because his body is an imperfect meat sack. So that is a familiar story, not as big to me, but I do ultimately, of course, say Embiid is the story. It's the most significant angle here.
Yeah, I mean, I know that the Clippers won, you know, and I would say so what, and I know that the Knicks won, and I would say pretty much so what. You're right about the Warriors, though. That's the second most significant win, and Draymond Green had it right. What was, you know, what frightens me is that on this show next week and the weeks to come, oh, can they make a run? Can Golden State make a run? Or they just
won
six in a row. But, I mean, the coach of Houston said that his players were not up to the moment. Said they were either soft
young
or
team.
Scared. That's not good. Let's move on. The Athletic had a piece yesterday about the possibility of a breakaway Super League in college football. Chip Kelly is now saying it's a lot like what he envisioned and talked about last December. All the Power Five teams would be in it, broken up by geography, not the slapdash conferences we have now. Eight divisions of 10 teams, with smaller conference teams having the ability to move up and down like in European soccer. And all of it would be funded by private equity. Pablo, do you see this Super League as inevitable?
Inevitable is a strong word, but on my show, Tony, I interviewed Jeffrey Kessler, who is the lawyer representing all of the plaintiffs who are suing the NCAA for damages. And these are treble damages. These are class action lawsuits. This is about antitrust. And what I have learned from talking to him and just reading the news, right, putting your finger in the wind and realizing, oh, the NCAA is dead. It's over for them. The conferences are going to have to pay out billions upon billions of dollars. Now, what I also have learned is that the conferences can do that without going to the private equity model. They just need to pay. They have lots of money in the media rights deals, which extend into the 2030s, by the way. These are multi-year agreements that are outstanding. And those agreements, the multi-billion dollar deals, the TV deals with ESPN and with Fox and everyone else, Tony, that's the reason why I don't see this as imminent, because that's still money coming in they're going to need. Why would you blow those up right now?
So I don't see this model as inevitable, because I think that, you know, I don't know that some of the real powerhouses in college football want to be on the same economic platform. I don't know that Georgia and Alabama want to share that money with Oklahoma State and Rutgers. I do, and I've always thought there would be a Super League of sorts, but it would be closer to 40 teams and not 80 teams, and it would be pushed up by tremendous television contracts, actually unbelievable television contracts. But I think if you step back for a second, you see the college football is breaking away from all other college sports. It's establishing what is a professional league at this point. There's probably going to be pay scales. There might be a common draft of high school players. There might be free agency, which is what the portal is now. The NCAA will have nothing to do with it. And I think it's the end of people saying, I have to go to class. You don't have to go to class. You're not going to be declared ineligible because you work for the company. You're not going to be declared ineligible.
Yeah, and a salary cap is in the offing, too. That's being speculated, right? The NFL may, in fact, be in favor of the private equity model. And by the way, as a general suspicion, if the NFL is in favor of the second largest college football league, the sport in the country, the second largest football league, excuse me, college football in the country, being now...
It's going to happen.
Yeah, so maybe they're less afraid if college stops being less like college because, by the way, the NFL has all the things you mentioned, and it's better. How do you stay distinguished in a business model that, of course, has to change nonetheless?
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, what should we expect in the matchup between DJ Burns and Zach Edey? We're going to ask Jay Billis.
We'll also ask him whether he sees a scenario in which Alabama beats UConn.
I always sort of back away from the term private equity. I always sort of think, you know, whoa, you can't do that in college. Until somebody like you explains to me, this isn't really college. This is a pro league. That's what it
is. I can't. You know what? How did we not quote Don Allmeyer in that segment? That's the biggest upset of all of this.
Right.
I had you at Allmeyer minus one.
PTI fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite PTI episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and First Take ad-free as well. They also have your favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/PTI. That's Amazon.com/PTI to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code PTI. That's code PTI. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Let's move to tomorrow's men's Final Four by heading to Arizona, where we find our great friend and, unlike Pablo, a member of the Ball Brotherhood, Mr. Jay Billis. Mm. Jay, let's start with this. North Carolina State versus Purdue features DJ Burns, who is a total load in the middle. I love him. Against Zach Edey, who's a great, great college player. How do you see that matchup?
Well, it's going to be difficult for both of Edey and Burns when they wind up going against one another. DJ Burns is unique. He catches the ball not on the block like most big guys do. He catches it more toward the corner, and he will back his matchup down into the low post, and then he's left-handed, so he tries to get to his right shoulder. But if you bring a double to him, it's difficult to double him because you have to bring the double from a longer distance. And he's a great passer, not a good one, but a great one. So he can cut you up. I think the issue is, do you want to go one-on-one with Burns in the post and see if he can score 50 on you? You know, he can get 27 or 29 as he did against Duke. But what you really don't want to do is have him get his teammates involved, and then you're trading that 2 for 3. But if he has to do that against Zach Edey, who's 7-4, and sort of immovable. Edey doesn't foul much, and he's the most efficient player in the country. I think Edie's going to cause NC State perhaps more problems on the offensive end than DJ Burns is going to cause for Purdue, because Purdue is an outstanding three-point shooting team. They shoot 41% from three. So if Purdue doesn't turn it over against NC State, I think they're going to be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, Jay, I think you called at one point NC State's run one of the most amazing things you've ever seen in basketball. I'm curious. I need a pick here. Do you see it continuing? Do you have Purdue or NC State in this game?
I have Purdue, Pablo, but I didn't think NC State would get this far, honestly. For them to win 5 straight games in 5 days, in the ACC tournament was one thing. That was truly remarkable. But then to follow it up by winning four straight in the NCAA tournament when you thought they might be emotionally out of gas, I just think Purdue has too much. The whole game's going to come down to turnovers, and that's what NC State has to do. They've got to turn over Purdue, because if you don't turn them over, Purdue's going to get a shot every time down, and that means they can get a, they can get fouled, which they do a lot, especially Edie. They shoot 24 free throws a game, and they can get an offensive rebound. And those are two pretty good things that Purdue gets just about every time down.
Yeah, the other side of the docket, of course, UConn, Alabama. UConn is the favorite, clearly a run like few other teams have ever made in terms of dominance. Can Alabama actually pull off an upset, though? How do you see that playing out?
You know, look, I favor UConn in the game. They're the best team, and they're winning games by 20, 30 points. They haven't been challenged. I think they've trailed a total of 28 seconds. What an unacceptable 28 seconds they put up in this tournament. But I think it's going to come down, you know, for Alabama to win the game, they're going to have to make 16 or more threes, and that's what they do. But Mark Sears is their best player, transferred in a couple years ago from Ohio U, where he was led the MAC in scoring. And he's a lefty, about 6'1". And they're going to put Stephon Castle on him. And Castle's a freshman, but he shut down Terrence Shannon Jr. when they played Illinois. Nobody had done that. So that's going to be the key matchup. But can Alabama get out in transition and play a little bit ahead of UConn's defense? Because with Donovan Klingon inside, and that's going to be a real big factor on the other end, is can UConn establish Donovan Klingon and really take advantage of the interior defense of Alabama? But with Stephon Castle guarding Mark Sears and with Klingon protecting the rim, UConn is formidable.
Hi, Jay, we will get you out of here with this, and we will switch gears completely. We'll go to the women's Final Four. In tonight's games, you want to pick some winners for us?
I see South Carolina getting to the final. Dawn Staley just has a great team. They're so powerful defensively. And you know, look, they're undefeated. They're the best team. And I think that UConn-Iowa game, they're going to be more eyeballs on that game than any other game that's played maybe in college basketball postseason, men or women. And I look, Caitlin Clark is a phenomenon. She's not only the best scorer, she's the best passer in college basketball, male or female. The passes she throws and how much she makes her teammates better, and they make those shots that she gets them those passes on. They're next-level passes. They're spectacular. So I favor Iowa, even though I think Paige Beckers is just about as good as Caitlin Clark. That's going to be a fabulous game.
Thank you so much, as always, Jay. Thank you.
Thank you, Jay.
Thank you.
Let's take one last break. Still to come, LSU's Haley Van Lith enters the portal.
And the Texans wipe out the final 3 years of Stephon Diggs' deal. So what does that mean?
I have no idea what that means. I like DJ Burns. I love watching him play. And he seems joyful, doesn't he? He seems joyful on the court, which I really
like. He loves his life right now. I don't know if it's going to get better than this.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Happy time, people. Happy 70th birthday on Sunday, Tony Dorsett, the Hall of Fame running back for the Dallas Cowboys. Dorsett was Emmitt Smith before Emmitt Smith. Plus, like Emmitt, Dorsett played at a time when running backs mattered in the NFL, and the team's offense ran through a great running back. Dorsett is from Aliquippa, Pennsylvania, the same hometown as NFL stalwarts Mike Ditka, Sean Gilbert, Ty Law, and Darrell Revis. Dorsett won the Heisman and the national championship at Pitt in 1976, then won Rookie of the Year and the Super Bowl in 1977. He went over 1,000 yards in 8 of his first 9 seasons. On a Monday night game in 1983, Dorsett ran 99 yards for a touchdown, the longest run from scrimmage in league history, since tied by Derrick Henry, another great running back.
He won the Super Bowl, won a national title, is in the College Football Hall of Fame, the Pro Football Hall of Fame, won the Heisman. Only he and Marcus Allen ever did that. And the only reason he didn't run for 1,000 yards in all 9 of those seasons he referenced is because of the strike in 1982, Tony. So pretty good career for Tony Dorsett.
A not-so-happy anniversary, Stephen Piscotty. Around this day 7 years ago, the utility man for the St. Louis Cardinals was hit not once, not twice, but 3 times in 1 inning as a batter and a base runner, forcing him to leave the game. Piscotty was hit by a pitch on the inside right elbow, then hit on the outside left elbow by a throw while advancing on a wild pitch, and finally hit in the head by a throw while sliding home. Piscotty left the game, was diagnosed with a head contusion. After passing concussion protocols, he was cleared to resume playing baseball. Piscotty went to Stanford, majored in atmospheric and energy engineering, Pablo. He played 8 major league seasons, batted .255, and hit 93 home runs in 726 games.
Thank you for giving all the medical disclaimers, because I just want to say that is one of the most ridiculous videos that has ever been taped on planet Earth, what happened to him in that single inning. And also, my science requirement was satisfied by taking dinosaurs and their relatives. So, touche, Stephen Piscotty, touche.
Happy trails to LSU for Haley Van Lith. The LSU point guard, who transferred into Baton Rouge this season, a couple of years after leading Louisville to the Final Four, is back in the transfer portal. Van Lith's arrival at LSU was seen as a boost for the defending national champions. Van Lith had left Louisville as a graduate transfer. After averaging 19.7 points per game as a shooting guard at Louisville, Van Lith averaged 11.6 at LSU as a point guard. We last saw the 5'7 Van Lith struggling to guard the 6-foot Caitlin Clark in the Iowa-LSU Elite Eight game, where Clark scored 41 points. Only late in the game did LSU attempt to help Van Lith by having Flaje Johnson take over on certain possessions.
Yeah, it is unfortunate that a lot of America met Haley Van Lith because she was a chalk outline drawn by Caitlin Clark. She's better than that. I hope she winds up somewhere better as well.
Yes, and by the way, you explained the discrepancy in the amount of points she scored in Louisville and in LSU, because the shooting guard, every time you get the ball, you're supposed to shoot, and a point guard's a different position.
Correct.
You're supposed to set up all the other people. Let's go to the big finish if we could. Bronny James entered the portal and also will test the NBA draft. Your thoughts?
More likely to wind up at Duquesne, where LeBron's high school teammate Drew Joyce is the coach now, than the NBA, I think. But Seton Hall scored the last 9 points to beat Indiana State by 2. They won the NIT. Your reaction?
I'm glad for Seton Hall. It was a very close and good game. And both Seton Hall and Indiana State were teams that were mentioned as deserving of the NCAAs. I don't know that they'd have gotten to the finals there, though. The Texans reduced Stephon Diggs' deal to 1 season. What does that signal?
Signals a pretty steep price, a second rounder for 1 season of a guy who, by the way, earmuffs Bills fans, might just go to the Chiefs after this season. The NBA, meanwhile, fined the Sixers $100,000 for not disclosing Joel Embiid's availability before playing him on Tuesday night. Does that make sense?
They listed him as out, and then they played him. This is about betting. That's what this is about. People make bets presuming that he's actually out. So I agree with it. Last one, Miami Marlins have started the season 0-8. What's the word for that?
Karmic. They deposed Kim Ang, and congratulations, you're 0-8.
We're out of time. We'll try and do better the next time. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
And I'm Pablo Torre. Thank you for watching. Pablo Torre Finds Out is my show. It's on the internet. Meanwhile, Michael Wilbon.
Wilbon is going to be back.
Back on Monday.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Electric E-Bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. 2 things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number 1, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number 2, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.